Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Legend Rouge Cycling Podcast for our first ever weekly show. We've been wanting to do this for quite a while, not content with covering most of the world tour. We want to cover those smaller races or other news throughout cycling that we've not had a format to do. We've maybe had to tack it in at the end of a race recap. But here we can do a recap of the Mallorcan races we've just watched, the Australian Classics in Victoria, the races upcoming. We'll have short previews for Algarve or Valenciano or Bessèges or Saudi Tour. About a million of them. We've got E3. Yeah. Sharing a homophobic cartoon, G's announcement of his, what I think is a very surprising schedule. So much news to get into, wild cards. I'm keen to do this, Benji, and this show is brought to you by Join Cycling. More on them in a second, one of our new partners. What's been the most shocking news, I guess, in cycling this at the moment, Benji? For me, it actually was like the G's announcement that he was going to do two Grand Tours in a row.
I think it's good that he announced that, but we'll get to that in a bit. But there's been a lot happening. It's like season's kicked off again, a lot of racing, and it's also a lot of racing at the same time. So a GP Marseillais, well, all the Mallorca challenges are happening, yeah. And then I'm trying to figure out where I can watch it because I'm still burning under the fallout of GCN Plus to the point that I'm not sure what's going to be on Discovery Plus and what won't be, and eventually. I reckon I've been able to watch most of what cycling had to offer in the recent month. And yeah, there's been a few debacles coming along, like the E3 thing, like Nibali bullying an Italian Zwift Academy member on Strava. Like, there's a lot happening in this sport.
Yeah. First, we'll wrap up the Australian races. One of our fan favorites, or one of our favorites, rather. I'm not sure if he's a fan favorite. Lawrence Pithy won the small group sprint in the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. It's got a hilly climb about 9Ks from the finish called Chalumbra. Australia loves to have these like punchy suburban hills to side their races, and this race is no different. And he was getting over that easily, actually, in the front group, and then he nearly got boxed in and won the sprint ahead of Nathanael Tesfatzion, who was very, very close, the Eritrean on Little Trek, and Jörg Zimmermann came third on Anton Marché. So Corbin Strong and Israel may be a little bit disappointed. I think they would have hoped for at least a podium with the strength of Williams and Corbin Strong.
Yeah, I think so as well. And the thing with Strong as well is that this parkour is kind of made for him, like reducing the group, and the way that the team Israel was trying to hold it together for him was also textbook. They were able to do so quite well, leading into a final sprint, but at the sprint he just wasn't good enough. If he was stronger, he was in a position that I thought he was completely boxed in, but somehow he made his way through that group and he looked faster than everybody by like quite a bit. He dominantly won that sprint. And I vividly remember starting to follow this guy. I think it was 2022 in the New Zealand Cycle Classic. I didn't know that he had won the Baltic Chain Tour the year before, and I think a stage in there as well. But New Zealand Cycle Classic, that's the moment when I was like, because for some reason, when the season starts, I kind of want to follow every race that exists, including like, a 2.1 race or something, a 2.2 race or something in New Zealand. I think Keegan Hornblow or something won it into 2022. I don't know why I remember that, but I was really hoping that he would win a sprint that year. I think he did it in Normandy that year. And then the year after, he obviously went to the World Tour team with Loire Atlantique and Cholet, where he was really good. Like those French smaller classics, he won one of the two, can't remember which of the two. And now in 2024, like the way he was not only sprinting at Santos Tour and Under, but also climbing on the Mount Lofty stage, where he was near the front group, like that shows not just sprinting, but versatile qualities, and it delivers in this race.
Yeah, he seems to be taking a big step up. There's also other riders in Mallorca who I think might be this year as well, but
yeah.
Spiffy is definitely one to watch out for. FDJ have started January with a bang, but not just with points, but actually winning races. And a World Tour race before you even start the races in February is certainly a way to start the season and get that stat sheet going. In the women's race, Cecilia Utrup-Ludwig was the best on Chalambra. Gigante attacked first, but then I think Utrup-Ludwig is probably, maybe in terms of like pure puncher, maybe the best in the world. Her and Lippert I see at the moment, or Vollering, in terms of like a 20-second attack uphill. She gapped everybody, but seemed to like put herself in the red because Dominika Vlodarczyk, I can't say it. How do you say her name?
I'd reckon it's Vlodarczyk and Rosita Reinhout. They both bridged up to Utrup-Ludwig. But did you just forget to mention you're probably one of your favorite punchers, Kasia Niewiadoma, or do you think that 20 seconds is too short for her?
No, Ludwig on an uphill punch, 20 second uphill punch is quicker than her, yeah.
So it's a kilometer, 8% Kalber she needs.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not even sure that's remotely the percentage of the Kalber, but I just
that sounds hard
made
for the
that Kalber. Up. Just made Amstel harder.
Yeah. That's Liège.
But anyway, we just said those two bridged up. Dominika Vlodarczyk, she was pretty close, I think, in Santos to the Under as well. Was pretty good there. Polish rider on UAE. And then Rosita Reinhout was top 10, I think, at Santos to the Under. A Dutch rider on Visma Lisa bike. And it was quite interesting because I thought that group was going to just either get caught or sprint at the finish line. And suddenly the camera pans to the front group and Rosita's off. Reinhout is just with a gap on the others. And I missed the attack. So I was like, is she going to make it?
She was pulling much stronger than them. And Ludwig wasn't rolling through, so like Ludwig is Costa and Valverde, right, in the women's race. So like she won't relay.
She's a pain in any chasing group, or even in the leading group.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's in the leading group, and then I think Vlodarczyk went for her to pull through. Reinhout's pulled through really strong. Ludwig's let the wheel go, and then there's a gap, and so Reinhout like just went, and she's a small rider. I was like, this is going to be tough. To keep this going, and with the group chasing behind, with also the duo, Gigante's attacking from group now three on the road. So there's groups everywhere, but Reinhout manages to stay away. Ludwig and Vlodarczyk can't really cooperate, and she wins a big race for Visma Leaseback Women's Team and for herself, and 19 years old, winning attacking on the flat like that. I was very surprised and super strong performance. So that was good to see young riders winning both races. Average age of about 20 years old, winning both the Cadel Evans races. There was also there's like a sprint classic, a 1-1 in the week called the Surf Coast Classic, where Binny won the sprint ahead of Viviani and Corbin Strong. Caleb Ewan didn't come 11th.
I think he came 11th or something. But is this the race that was previously called Race Torque? Because I remember vaguely. Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know for sure if it was that. But hey, good win by Binyam. I don't know how much I can place on it. I actually didn't see the final of that race, so I don't know if you saw specifically the sprint itself, whether he was in a better position or not. But I literally couldn't find where to watch it.
It wasn't live broadcast. It was only highlights, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll give you a pass this time. Luke Plapp, he raced both those races. I'm not sure that was the best idea, frankly, with maybe bigger ambitions in a Grand Tour later in the year. But thankfully, he didn't go down again with that severe road rash. But he actually looked good. He and Tarling particularly, but Plapp actually looked very good in Cadel Evans' road race. Trying to bring Kell back, but it's tough to win that. It was his skill set unless you really go clear after Chalambra like Simmons tried to do, and it's tough on your own with Williams chasing on Israel behind. That's all the Australian races. Benji, how would you rate the Australian summer of cycling?
Ooh, I like that the youngsters really showed out on top. I also enjoy that Stephen Williams, maybe not the youngest rider, is also winning a race like that outside of the Arctic Race of Norway or whatever he wins throughout the season usually. So that's also a bit of a step up there. But I like Youngsters winning, but it's also a forgettable Australian season for me personally.
Yeah, no, like Richie Poor Dominus. It was good to see Gigante back. I think the women's was okay. I think the women's, both Cadell's finals was very, very exciting, particularly the women's.
It's like a crit.
I think it was, yeah.
Is that rude?
Yeah. maybe. I think it was good to see not Ineos Jumbo or UA winning all the races.
Yeah.
It's just good to have different teams winning some World Tour races as well to start the year.
Sure.
Maybe that'll change in the upcoming month.
Yeah, but
There
is light points though in riders on that team that you might not have expected to perform that well. As in Del Toro,
like Del Toro,
obviously.
Yeah.
We expected him to perform at some point in his life because he was bloody talented. But to do it at the first race already, Lemon at Visma, same thing. Vader I was maybe a bit disappointed in because I expected him to be leader, but Lemon was just better this race. So it's kind of the getting to know the maybe newer riders on the block, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's Australia. That's Australian cycling. My Australian summer of cycling is over as well. And I did that on the Join Cycling app. So the Join Cycling app, it's really big in the Netherlands and now they're going global. It's an adaptive training platform for you to get the most out of your cycling. You can use your power meter or heart rate as well with the Join Training tool. And it's an adaptive training plan. So you insert, or you have your training history, you insert your goals, you insert your weekly availability, and then you can change that daily availability. I'm not available to train today on the app, and it adjusts your training program on the fly immediately and suggests workouts you have. But the best thing that I like about it is the flexibility, because, like, I'll be frank with you, I am not going to do the exact 100% compliance with the intervals of a training plan for four weeks. Straight, I'm not going to do that. Like, I've tried it before and I just can't do it. Riding outside as well, a fair bit, impossible. That's why I've used this for my post-COVID recovery training plan the last month, because there's a recovery training plan when you're getting back into fitness. And it's really good because I like the low intensity, but like higher volume of it. But aside, you can insert plan. I got a group ride where I'm going to sort of an hour and a half of junk. That you can insert that into the app and then it adapts your training for the next days and your plan accordingly. Because for your like mental enjoyment of cycling, I want to go ride an hour and a half of junk with people outside. that's part of enjoying cycling. And then the next day you're back on the plan you need to do based on the ride that you just did. So the goalposts, the flexible goalposts guiding you in the right direction is what I love most about this app. And you can try it too. You can use our promotional link to access a free 30-day trial. You don't need to insert your credit card. I think that's a pretty generous trial period. 30-day free trial. And then Join will notify you 7 days in advance that you can then have a 6-month subscription also at a discount. So all you need to do is download the Join Cycling app in the App Store or Play Store, open the app and sign in without selecting an in-app subscription. Go to join.cc/lanternrouge and enter the URL supplied in the show notes or scan the QR code to get 30 days of free training. So I'd encourage you to try it out, see if you enjoy it as much as me, and report back. I really enjoyed Join Cycling so far, and thanks to them for supporting the launch of our weekly show in particular. All right, men's Spanish 1-1 races and Mallorca Challenges. Benji, these are the points farmers. So these are a series of races in Mallorca, or also in Valencia a couple before, but basically they have like 5 1-1s in a row, and the reason they're not a stage race is they allow you to sub in and out riders each day depending on whether they don't want to race 5 days in a row. And it also means there's more points available. So do you want to speed run these, Benji? And I'll dip in with the ones I've watched.
I'll speed run with the earliest ones. So the GP Valencia, or Clásica Comunitat Valenciana 1969. Apparently that's the name. Bruno Wegen won a sprint ahead of Kokar and Tim Thorntuitenberg. We spoke about Little Trek Future Racing Team, that they have quite a few family members, but this is actually a really good family member because he's already sprinting to third on his first race of the season. Next one, GP Castellón, also known as the Ruta de la Ceramica. Matthews winning an uphill sprint ahead of one of the Aja Desert boys that can actually pedal 1,000 watts, probably. Pierre Gautreau, did you expect that?
Yeah, I said him.
Yeah,
I said
you did.
Him. I said, this guy can do 1,000 watts.
You're right.
Oh, by the way, join cycling. It even adapts my 1,500 watts, 50 seconds. You think it wouldn't, but the app, I mean, there isn't as much data for machine learning to adjust for someone that built that way. But Pierre Gautreau, I mean, he's close. He can get him in the train. Where's Bennett? When's he start?
I don't know. I generally don't know. I haven't seen him on a start list yet, but that might change in the future. Mallorca challenges then, like you said, each team selects roughly 12 riders and adapts their start list for each race depending on who feels like riding what. Trofeo Calvia was the first one on the men's side. Simon Kjær, I don't know anymore. He outsprinted Vlasov.
Simon Kjær.
Simon Kjær outsprinted Vlasov. That's kind of the story. After being on the attack with the legendary Alex Aramburu. So that had to be mentioned. So first win for Yev there. McNulty as well.
McNulty's always cooking in these races.
He is, but I feel like he's now waiting to attack until later in the race from people compared to when he went early and tried to drop everybody early in the past. But hey, he lost, so unfortunate for McNulty. Hopefully he can win some more in the end, in the future. Trofeo Ses Salinas. Next one, this was a bit of a versatile sprint at the end. Then we got a lead out for Quickstep by Luke Lamperti into like a 90-degree left bend, but he does like a crit-like dive bomb into the final corner with Paul Manier, who was going to sprint for Quickstep in the wheel, and Manier just holds off Dainese. So really strong performance, and I don't know, I generally didn't know if Manier or Lamperti was going to sprint, but I had seen something on Twitter about Johan Molli, which is like the one of the scouts, saying that he had a really good period on the training camp. So I guess we're looking at a, not necessarily a new Alaphilippe, but a versatile sprinty Alaphilippe.
Well, can I just say, Paul Magnier, like, you look at this guy, you look at his results.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. Like, you look at him sprinting and his technique. You're like, how the fuck is he going this fast?
Exactly.
He looks like a climber. He looks like Mauri van Sevenant sprinting.
He's like Tiny Milan.
But he's dropping 1,400, 1,500 watts. He's going out of the wheel. He's so unerring. I'm like, what the fuck? It's unbelievable. Apparently, he beat Merlier in some town sprints where they were fully going for it. So, yeah, I don't think Alaphilippe ever sprinted that quick on the flat.
One time, when he won MSR.
Yeah, true. But, man, that's Paul Manier. I mean, perfect from Quickstep. He's very, very exciting. He's a good rider. And Lamperti, he was supposed to go for it tonight. I haven't had a chance to watch that because it happened while I was asleep 4 hours ago, 5 hours ago. So Benji can fill me in. But
of course.
Yeah, that was a really good race. And then there was Trofeo Serra Tramontana where there was, I mean, it's kind of crazy that you've got Vlasov. I'm very surprised.
Yeah?
Like Vlasov fully going for it in these races in January.
I love it.
It's surprising though. Like you don't see other guys who would be targeting the Giro properly or who are doing this race. I looked into the power file closely. Like he waited for the worst time to attack. So he got Aliotti, I think, to pace really hard there.
Yeah.
It's a 14K, 7% climb, descent, little false flight kicker, and then descent to the finish. And Aliotti pace. There's a flatter section in the climb, and then Vlasov attacked like just after the flatter section when everyone's heart rate went down 10 BPM.
Okay.
So he should have gone earlier, but I don't think he was dropping everybody anyway because he couldn't get rid of McNulty and Van Aidveld, who's a 22-year-old on Lotto Destiny. They relay the descent. I don't know why people are complaining. These guys walked it. They walked the descent. They would do it quicker in training. And then it was a sort of, it wasn't actually a downhill finish. Like there was a corner downhill, but then it was a kicker uphill. And basically McNulty was on the front. Got everyone up to speed on the downhill and then was kind of fried by the time it kicked up again. And Van Aidveld beat Vlasov in the sprint because he was positioned better in second wheel. So Van Avermaet, I think he's got a bit of, he seems decent with his race sense.
I think so as well. He knows when to bridge two people. He knows when to risk it, when necessary to risk it. He's got a quick sprint at the end of these type of races as well. Maybe a bit of a weakness in descending is what I saw in the race that came afterwards, which we'll now talk about, Trofeo Poyencha, because Igor Arrieta had built up a lead there. He's one of those youngsters that is on UAE now. One of those guys that came from Ker Pharma that we 2 years ago might have said, oh, maybe that guy could end up heading to World Tour. Here he is. He's also family from that Movistar coach that got binned, I think. Anyway, that's the whole side story. Van Aertveld bridged basically on the last climb, I'm pretty sure, towards Arrieta, and dominantly to the point that nobody's in the wheel of Van Aertveld here. But he's not the best descender, and you see that because when he drops Arrieta and goes into this descent, Arrieta's suddenly back after dropping 15 seconds. So Arrieta's a good descender.
Note that down. On the race I said before, Arrieta dropped Romeo when they were dropped by group two and came back to group two on the descent. So I think he's a good descender, that guy.
Yep. I think he's a good descender indeed. I think they were calling him a demon descender on the broadcast, but that title is only on the side for one man only, Alex Anamburu, who broke his collarbone in this race. So that's descending. A very sad moment. Did he do a descending?
I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah. You shouldn't, actually. It's Alex Anamburu.
I'm not.
Legendary
I want
rider.
To have a good How year. Dare He's you. In a contract year. So yeah. I'm not laughing.
Exactly. I agree. But next up, those two riders are basically looking like they might get caught or might not get caught. They've still got 20 seconds, but then Arrieta slids out in a corner somewhere, and then you've got Van Aertveld alone on the front, and there's some flat left before the finish, and he gets caught by the group where the cooperation was relatively okay. I think McNulty was doing quite a bit of work after Arrieta had crashed in front of him. And who was still in the group? Marius Meyerhofer, mostly known for winning. No,
he
mostly
only performs on this day, Benji. He performs on this one day a year, Cadel Evans Day, 28th
actually,
January.
He was also seventh on Trofeo Calvia the same week. So he's actually doing really well this week. But I will tell you, though, the day that I will most remember this man for will always be, I think, the Junior World Championships, the last man to hold Emco's wheel, no?
Yeah, but he was in the break ahead. But I think he was, yeah.
Yeah, but that was our details.
Still.
But anyway, continue the story. We basically have the group ahead in total. They're trying to force each other they're trying to close each other's attacks. And Soler tries to go in the last kilometer. Meyerhofer chooses to respond to that, which kind of stomps the sprint a tiny bit. And Pelayo Sanchez, Movistar new signing, we saw him at Burgos in the Vuelta last year, outsprints him at the finish line. So Dubski for Movistar and
Telefonica celebration.
Yes.
Mobile did that. It's so good. The Spanish guys always like it's crazy, right? These guys, a lot of them don't win very much, and they probably like they might not have won for like 3 years. Win, and they'll have like their celebration dialed up. It's like they win every week. They got it ready. Bang! He's across the line doing the celebration. Like he wins every like he's Matthew Van der Poel. I love it. So that was good. Sanchez is was he the guy who dropped Remco on stage 20 of the Vuelta last year? Yeah, he's actually good. He's a good rider. That was really nice. Romeo was really good. He's Ivan Romeo, I think, is Carlos Ferona replacement.
I think Sanchez was second at this race last year as well.
Yeah.
Vaguely remember something like that. But anyway, continue. Sorry.
Oh, Ivan Romeo, he's like a 20-year-old. He's like, if he was Belgian, he would be a classic specialist, but unfortunately he's Spanish, so he will actually just be a climber, except he's 6'3". So Carlos Verona etc. So he climbed very, very fast on the Van Aertveld win day. So he looks like Verona's replacement probably on 50-60 grand. Or maybe more, but yeah, I think he's pretty good. So that was the Yorkian races lost. Is he good on PCM?
No, he plays PCM. That's the only thing I know.
Well,
sorry, good random fact.
Gerben Thaysen beat Alexander Kristoff, who UNOX tried for all week and was not competitive in, which is not a good sign, I guess, because like, frankly, if you make the finish in these races, they're not the hardest races. And at this time of the year, like, a lot of the riders hit their peak sprint numbers at this time of the year, when they're not as fatigued by racing. So he, like, if he was going to be sprinting quick, it would be here. But Tyson's pretty fast.
I agree. Tyson's pretty fast. Was going to win more after last year. But I also feel like when it comes to Christoph, the sprint was not necessarily perfectly led out by UnoX. As in, Todd Gudmestad, really good lead out. But Christoph is not the rider that you allow to come out of your wheel or get to come out of your wheel with 100 meters to go, right? He's the guy that needs to come out with 200 meters to go, get to acceleration, and then beat everybody. Yeah? And it was just too late. Hermann Tyson had launched from past them already when Christoph started launching, and then you're fucked, eh?
Yeah, then he's not going to win. Those are the Mallorcan races. I would say takeaways are Van Aertveldt. I'm keen to see how he goes this year.
Yep.
Pello Sanchez and some of the young guys on Movistar. And Magnier looks like someone you don't want to be in a reduced group in with in the finish. I think he is like very, very, very fast. So that's my takeaways from it.
So many youngsters, like even Nerurkar was top 10 in certain stage already for EF.
EF were pretty solid. We didn't sort of big them up, but they were pretty solid. I think a lot of teams here have been like, we got to get some points. Tudor, EF, UAE.
Tudor.
Tudor got some points. I don't think it'll be enough to really make any difference in this cycle, though. In the women's Mallorcan races, in Trofeo Felanic.
Close enough.
I'm supposed to be able to speak Catalan, that was difficult. Naomi Rueg won. She's on EF, and she was actually wearing, Luke might bring this up, one of the helmets. I don't know if it is a TT helmet or if it's a road helmet that's basically like a POC Tempo. The UCI is going to have to step in here and be like, these helmets are out of control.
And it's not just them, because they have like this little lid over their ears. And I'm pretty sure I saw Ganna wearing a casque also with a little lid over his ear. Yeah. So it's like a new trend to kind of make road helmets look more like TT helmets, make them more aero. And on one end, I love the innovation. They look fucking horrible, but they must be giving them some advantage.
Yeah, it would give an advantage now, whether you could wear it in the real heat. I'm not sure, but it certainly was working for the EF women's team. They were. Because Valieres won the next day at Trofeo Palma, and then they looked like they were going to go for a hat trick at Trofeo Binissalem, but Persico blocked Rueg, who was leading out Gasparini, the young Italian sprinter on UAE, and obviously there was no sanctions. So great start for EF's women's team. They were competitive and won two of the three races. And UAE pretty solid too, as well as being solid, I think, with in Australia. So let's see how the EF women's team goes. New management. Ezra Tromp, no?
Yeah. A bit extremely puzzling to me, as in, like, we had this whole, like, thing between Ezra Tromp going to EF, which was the previous manager of Jumbo-Visma women's team, and then Jos van Emden coming out that they were working at a lower level than amateur, is literally the quote he said, which there has to be a seriously low level to be on that level. And I think the good conclusion is that we can have about this whole debacle that EF and Visma Liesebike are both starting off the season really well. So they both seem to be in a good position at the moment. It's early to take conclusions, but I think it's fair to say both are happy with the start of this season. I reckon winning Kelam's Great Ocean Roadways with Rosita Reinhout at Visma's side. And here we see EF doing really well in the Mallorca Challenges. UAE, though, I want to say, yes, they were prominent and they won one of them, but they could have won three, actually. As in the first one, Felanic, they had four riders in the first 10 riders, but their leadout just didn't connect. Their leadout had lost the first two riders and their sprint had lost the leadout. So it's like they were everywhere in the group except where they needed to be. In Trofeo Palma, Valier was gone with Persico. Persico was the one that launched the attack on the descent and crashed in front of her. And Valier was alone as a consequence. So if it wasn't for that crash, you might have seen a different outcome. But hey, it's part of cycling, staying on the bike. Otherwise, you can't win. And this is an example of that. So I think while they won with Gasparini, they probably have a feeling of like, there was something more in this. But that's it for me as well. When it comes to Mallorca Challenge, I'm curious to see what the next couple of women's races will have. And I think There's a Valencia Classic coming somewhere in the next week as well. So curious what happens there in a sprint.
The last race recap is GP Marseillais, which was last night. So I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. But I saw the little quick highlight. Geniez beat Baudin at the finish. Geniez is quite a versatile rider. Just difficult for him to often win because he is about 6'3" without the biggest sprint normally. But I really, really like him as a rider, the Luxembourger. Zangler crash, which I don't like. So I'll have to check on his condition.
I need a... Geniez's sprint is not amazing. So
no, not the best.
I generally didn't expect him to beat Baudin. Maybe because Baudin, Pro Cycling Manager back in the day, was a good sprinter. But in real life, he missed the
Tramadol guy.
Yep, he's a Tramadol guy on Argentina.
Nairo got to be like, what the fuck did I do wrong to sit out a season? I mean,
true?
I'm joking, but also I'm not.
Yep.
Aren't they MPCC?
They are MPCC, and they put him back in the team.
I mean, I'm not saying that's even wrong. Like, I'm not saying that's wrong, right?
Double
like,
standard.
That's the rule. The rule's eyes, not at before. It is now. If you get Tramadol now is doping, right? Luke will correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Well, that's not Colombia.
Tramadol is now an ADRV, anti-doping rule violation, but it wasn't. And so Baudin got his results from that Giro annulled, but no sanction.
Yep.
And so, you're not obliged, I would not think, to suspend him. But Nairo got blacklisted for a year, so it's like... Anyway.
Talking about Nairo, you haven't seen it yet, I'm pretty sure, but you got to watch the Colombian National Championships replay if you saw it somewhere.
I've seen the highlights, yeah.
It was a really good race because it was a breakaway with former Bahrain rider, Alejandro Osorio. That's the guy that got kicked out of the team, according to the articles, because of a breaching COVID-19 rules.
It was more than that. It was like there was a lot of problems, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that was the public statement, one I mentioned. But he was pretty strong in the breakaway, strongest rider in the breakaway. But from behind, we had an attack when the gap was 4 minutes, I'm pretty sure, or 6 minutes, somewhere in between. From the peloton, we saw an attack of Higuita together with Bernal. And you know how the attack happened? It's typical. Because those two riders were doing the attack, and Quintana was in the wheel, and he looks behind him to see who will take over. And he keeps looking behind him. Nobody takes over, and the two ride off into the sunset.
Same but anyway, thing over and over again.
I forgot to mention the end of the race, but hey, go watch it.
Oh yeah, Osorio won.
By like 3 seconds.
He didn't get fired for being a bad rider. He's a good rider.
Or
talented rider, but it's difficult. It's also difficult for guys coming from a different continent and then they're young, 22 years old. And maybe the teams can also do a better job integrating them.
For sure.
I would say. But Vauclin third in Marseillais as well. Keen to see how he goes.
I still remember stories from Gaviria and Contreras back in Quickstep that they were staying with a Belgian family or something. And Contreras couldn't really adapt to that as well as Gaviria. And that's why he ended up leaving the team. And that shows that there's teams that are trying to do everything they can, but also it might not be enough for every single one of those riders that might need more support because they're here without their family, usually without any support outside of the team. And if you're fully dependent on your team, then you also don't have a third party really overlooking that. So that's kind of a nifty situation sometimes.
How are you adapting to the UK, Benji?
It's fucking gold, man. I don't go outside.
Can't be colder than Belgium.
I don't know. How am I adapting to the UK? I enjoy living here in one place now because it's in one place. So less traveling. That's fun. When it comes to training, I'm looking at riding indoor more at the moment, but I'm going to jump outdoor, I think, next week. I'm going to try and visit Box Hill for the first time. So let's hope I can find it. Yeah. On Zwift, it's in the London map. And then I opened the map and Googled where Box Hill is. And it's nowhere near.
Near Dorking or something?
I think so.
Near Reigate.
I don't know what that is.
I had a dentist in Reigate, orthodontist.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I don't think he did a very good job.
I can't tell.
Anyway, speaking of I guess, British people, what a segue. Geraint Thomas. I knew he was doing the Giro. I think he wanted to do the Tour. Like, I don't think he wanted to do the Giro necessarily if the parkours were neutral. But then when you see the TTKs and how flat they are in the Giro and the compared to the Tour, and then you see, I then thought he has to do the Giro, especially with how soft the Giro start list is outside of one notable exception to that. But then I did not expect him to do the Tour double, Benji, because frankly, he's been terrible in his second Grand Tours, right?
Yep.
Like, the Vuelta last year was a complete write-off. I'm not sure when else it... I have to check when else it happened, but I have a... And the problem is, like, in 2021, when he came into the... When he did the Tour, he wasn't helpful, really, as a domestique. Like, correct. I'm not really... So when did he do... He hasn't done... So 2017, he did Giro, Tour, Double, DNF both, and he crashed out of both. 2015, he did Tour of Vuelta, Double, which is more common. And so, yeah, it's a new thing. He's never done the Giro... Never completed the Giro, Tour, Double, because he DNF. So what do you make of this?
I don't know. On one end, I feel like I see the Giro as the race he should go to be able to contend for a podium.
For sure.
So that's number one. So it's a good idea to go to the Giro. And I feel like he expressed, if I recall correctly, that he felt like he missed out last year by not going to the Tour de France. And maybe it's more the emotional reason that he wanted to go to the Tour de France because he missed out on the whole festival of it. That is the reason that he chose to do it, because we've seen that Ineos is now, like, the fact that Bernal went to the Vuelta, that shows that the hierarchy of the team chose it and not necessarily the best possible rider at that moment. And maybe for Thomas, that's something similar. Does that mean Thomas will be shit at the Tour de France? Not necessarily. It might be that this might be the year where he can switch it, but I'm more confident in the Giro than for the Tour. And in the Tour, I'd expect him to fold into a more domestique role in my head at the moment. That's how I view it at the moment. And I think he's still valuable in that role. I think he can offer something there, but then he needs to be... There were stages in the Vuelta where he was competitive, but he would need to be at least that level to be able to do something for others in the team as well. Well, the one stage where he was fighting for the stage win, with that you can domestique somewhat.
He could have domestiqued for Ganna to win that one. Yeah.
Exactly. but it's also... Go ahead.
I actually think if he focused on the Tour, he also could do really well there. Got the gravel stage. You've got these really attritional stages in the third week where it's just like an energy contest. I actually think he would have... I don't know how Rodriguez and Pidcock will progress, but I would be more confident saying G would get a really good result in the Tour than those two.
Top five?
I would even say he could shoot for a podium.
Okay.
At the Tour, like, that Isola stage, I think really suits him. But the start list is so much stronger. So then, when you have the Giro, where he's in second right now, penciled in. You couldn't put Simon Yates above him based on recent Grand Tour performance. So, or correct, whoever's doing it for Jayco. So I think it's just the reality of the start list. That being said. Listen, if he wants to go to the Tour, that's fine, but I think it needs to be very clear that they've got, like, who is the leaders, Pidcock or Rodriguez. That needs to be based on the reality of shape as well. And it needs to be not Steve Cummings saying, gee, what do you think we should do tomorrow in the Tour? That'd be my concern. But I think, it's still, you don't want to send too young a team, you know, because if Rowe can't go because he doesn't have the level, although you got Kwiatkowski and Castro, they won a few Grand Tours in their life. It's interesting.
It's also
I wonder, where's Arensman going then?
He's on the long list of the Giro that I can find, but I have no full Giro, confirmation of that. Together with Viviani, that said, he will try to ride himself into the team of the Giro, which I'm not sure I would do that. Just sprint with Ganna. You've got just as much chance to win a stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Outside of that, Foss. He's on the long list, but if you sign him for this team, you have to send him to the Giro. Like, if you believe in him, you have to send him to the Giro. I might not believe that he's going to be the all-out GC rider, but as a domestique, he's Giro-worthy.
God, they'll have a... They wish a TT. If they have Arensman, Foss, G, Ganna...
Hater?
That's the strongest team TT team I've ever seen. Exactly. There's actually... They have a lot of riders, you know, to send, and then you got the Frailes, Depluse. I think Depluse is doing the tour. Where's Bernal? Is he doing the tour?
Would Ineos win the TTT World Championships if it existed in 2023? Yes, right? Or would Visma show up?
I think Ineos would win. Not Ineos lost Roglic and Dennis.
Yeah.
And
Visma lost.
Yeah, Visma lost. I think Ineos would win a TTT.
Yeah. Imagine if they didn't.
Thomas, Hayter, Tarling, Ganna. It's a Arensman team is ridiculous, Foss. okay, that's sort of the Ineos long list news. There was also tied to this a sort of press conference by John Alec, which I think you attended, Benji, who's the new CEO of Ineos, where he said that Brailsford's actually not sort of fully disappeared. He's kind of still there as head of Ineos Sport. I think the reality of that is that if you're doing a rebuild at Manchester United, the time you have to maybe watch footage of Leonard van Eedvelt attacking in Trofea, fucking Tramontana, Valenciana, Mickey Mouse is limited.
How I perceive that press conference, the way the answers were given and so forth, felt to me like, one, I get really good vibes that he's a nice guy, which is irrelevant for the job. Two, I have the feeling that he's very good with politically saying the correct answer to the question, as in he's well media trained to the point that when he's giving an answer like that,
just fucked off.
Like, for example, when a question occurs and someone asks, "Oh, was there ever a question on the table about Ineos's certainty that they will keep supporting the cycling team?" And you're like, "Oh, that question was never on the table," which might be true, but it's also like, there has to be someone in the team that brought it up at some point, realistically, based on the last year. So it's like, take everything with a grain of salt as well.
Yeah, he comes from the McLaren structure, the F1 structure, so probably they're a little bit more polished. But yeah, it was interesting to hear that the budget hasn't gone down, so that seems like the budget hasn't gone down, but a lot of expensive riders have left, so maybe they're building a war chest for Remco.
Or they've spent it all on extension. They paid it all to Movistar for Rodriguez.
Eusebio's, he's got he had a big Christmas. I don't know. But yeah, I think that was interesting to hear. So maybe they're going to be very active in the transfer markets in the next couple of years.
Yep.
That was the news from G. We'll get on to a couple of race previews, just rapid fire. I'll do Alula. It is a pretty similar stage as all these, really. There's like basically uphill sprints. There is one where it's like 4Ks, 4%, but it's not as difficult, I don't think, as the one that Vaderenschold beat Milan in last year, that sort of finish. All of the sprints basically finish in these uphill drags, which are quite grippy. I think Consolini won one last year. You got to get your timing really right. And then there's the stage five, which is the sort of the main GC stage, which is actually a very unique parkour. You don't really see too many like this, which is basically flat. And there has been crosswinds before on this stage from Alula Old Town. And then they do a 3K 12% climb, proper steep stuff. And then there's a flat 8Ks at the end, which can also, wind direction is important, finishing at 1,100 meters, the sky views of Harat Uwariyid. The start list for this has improved in terms of GC riders quite a bit from the days of Luca Mezgets battling out for second on that stage, to Buitrago against Formolo, against Guerrero, who won GC overall last year, So now Simon Yates doing it, Benji, no doubt because of the title sponsorship of the race organizer of Jayco.
Yeah, for certain. And I believe like Melier, Milano, Groenewegen, those riders on the start list. I expect Groenewegen to win one sprint, Milano to win one sprint. I feel like for the parkour, there's not much confirmation yet. As in, like, I still feel like we're missing a few sprinters is how I feel when I look at the start list. I was expecting there to be more. So maybe a team like Bora, who currently has three riders on their provisional start list, might include a sprinter here or there that we don't see yet. Kokar might be able to do well on these uphill drags, to be honest, these uphill sprints. So curious who Tudor will send. Will this be an Arvid the Klein party? I hear Luke saying from the other room. I'm kind of looking forward to the last stage again, like you mentioned, that one with the steep climb and then the flat portion towards the finish line where Tim de Klerk was so bloody good. I think was it last year, but it's irrelevant to this, but it reminds me of that stage in 2017 Giro, I think stage 22 Asiago, a stage where Dumoulin ended up winning the Maglia Rosa and Nibali was fighting him. And I was depressed after that stage because that meant Dumoulin had won the Giro instead of Nibali, but kind of reminded me because it's also a climb in a flat portion. So I like that vibe. It's very rare in cycling, but sorry about bringing up Nibali because I'm not so happy with him. I'll talk about it later. Anyway,
there's Jason Tessen here, who's decent for Total. There's Dusan Rajovic. Watch out for him.
GC.
Be careful if you're near him. Well, Simon Yates has to win. Like, no ifs, no buts. He has to win. It's their title. It's their second most important race after the Tour de France. And they're sending him to, you know, no offense, it's a 2.1. Like, and you look at the other GC riders here, and it's like our boy Le Cerf is the top three favorite. Rightly, he's like a young climber on Quickstep, so I'm keen to see how he goes. But Simon Yates, Finn Fisher Black is on the provisional for UAE. He's also dangerous. So, but yeah, Yates has to win.
I'm also intrigued which of those like versatile rulers might end up in the top 10, like we have seen on this Parkour. Like, I was also looking at Sobrero and maybe Milesi.
True. Sobrero, yeah.
Formula is probably going to be somewhere up there. I remember him last time on this Parkour as well.
He was good last year.
He's now at a different team. I completely forgot which team he went to. Movistar?
He went to Movistar, yeah. They're building. Yeah. Sciandri is building an Italian. They realize they got to send Italians to the Giro.
They're not a summer team anymore.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Yates, the pressure's on him. He's got, yeah. I mean, there's Ben Hermans. I'd hope to, this is the sort of race he used to win.
Where the fuck is he these days?
Cofidis.
Wait, what? Really? Jesus. Yeah. I did not expect that. We did a preview on this, didn't we? Completely forgot.
We did. I think Merlier will be the best sprinter, but it's actually, I'm keen to see this race, see some of the sprints. Otherwise, there's Etoile de Bessege. I would say it has the strongest start list overall. It usually does, frankly, because it has Trek. It had Ineos last year.
Valenciano's pretty strong too, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, but that's a Dopro. Sorry, that's a Dopro. No.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Ineos are not doing Bessege this year. They sent Tullet and Tarling last year, and they were good in the TT. So it is a little bit weaker, but still, Mads Pedersen usually cleans up a sprint here. Arno Dulli's not turning up. It was seeing him against Pedersen was great on this sort of Mont Bouquet or punchy finish last year. But stage one, uphill kick at the end, a bit of guard. That's just like got Mads Pedersen written all over it. Probably Kosnefroy in second. Then there's another one which is probably on too difficult for him. That's more Kosnefroy. It's the perfect finish for him because it's 900 meters, 9%, 2 minute effort. Stage three is a medium mountain stage. Benji will say they're just hills before a flat sprint. So we'll see if the new Trek lineup.
It's 4K at 4%. I can do it backwards.
Medium mountain, buddy. So we'll see Trek chasing on that stage. See if they got a better team to do that this year. Then there's a 4.5K, 4.6% medium mountain finish on stage four. So again, we're seeing a lot of these, the limit for But Pedersen, I think he can win all of them on his day, except maybe the 1K 9%er. But and then there's the final TT, which is uphill to Ailes. 10.5Ks, and then the final one actually has some steep passing at 3K, 6%.
Yep.
Can Pedersen win GC here with Boney?
Yes, he can. I think this was the parkour where Stewart and Bettiol were fighting for GC 2 years ago, Montbouquet not being part of that. Yeah. I'm looking at GC at Benjamin Thomas, Mats Pedersen, the TT kind of riders. What do you think of... Well, Bettiol won this race before on this kind of parkour, but Alex Segard is a good TT, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure about... Yeah, he should be able to survive those hills, no? Top 10? Top 5?
The hills are pretty fast and gradual. So it just depends. It's the bonies and if you lose 30 seconds in bonies, I can't see him making that up on Pedersen in a 10K TT, you know? Yeah, so
for sure.
That's the problem for someone like that. Wells. You really have to be winning stages. As you said, Bettiol, he should be good in those sort of finishes, but he's hot, hit and miss. He came second in this race in GC twice.
What is
do EF? They've got a strong team. Do they? Healy's TT should be pretty good, but he's going to have to win a stage solo, which, by the way, Healy's got to go for stage 3.
For sure. Right? Yeah.
He's got to go. If they want to win GC, that's the play. You can't let Pedersen win that.
Can't he podium the first one too, maybe? Like 700 meters, 800 meters, 7%. Pedersen's going to win it. Like that's fixed in stone, but you might have to get 4 bonus seconds there.
You think the pure punchers like Kozenefra or like Mediol or like Magnus Cort, I think that's going to be tough for him.
Difficult.
To get those bonies. Anyway, so it's a lovely little race and there's a decent number of World Tour teams going. We need to see Vauclair as well. I'm not sure if he's doing Provence. But Provence doesn't have a mountain stage either, I don't think so. That's his first stage race of the year after starting in Marseille. Last preview, the best one. This is like a Grand Tour level start list every year. Valenciana, we've got Vlasov, Kemner, Hindley, Bora sending a stack team, Sivakov, Vine. We've got Milan sprinting with Moritz and Buitrago. Matthews has already won this year, Bilbao. Really, really nice race. This is the race last year that really Costa won, and the final stage is really good. Every stage looks about the same, frankly. It's got like a medium mountain climb of varying gradients for about 15Ks from the finish after a lumpy stage. That's stage 1. Stage 2, about the same, maybe a bit of a shorter climb. Stage 3 is more of a pure sprint stage, but you got to manage the breakaway well because there's a steep climb in the about halfway through where a smart break could really get ahead and be difficult to be brought back. The main GC stage is stage 4, which is a funny old stage, sort of quite hilly all day. I think it'd be over 3,000 meters climbing, 175Ks. They finish up Valdebo, which all of these riders have done a million times in their December and January training camps in Valencia.
For sure.
But they have a Rampas climb, the Pego climb, Alto de Misery.
Yes, Alto del Miserat. Fun fact, 2 weeks ago, on the market of Pego, I went to a Turkish kebab store, and it's fucking good. So if you're ever there, that is a spot to go to.
What's your go-to?
I just ate frites with nuggets, but...
Oh, so you didn't get a kebab.
My wife ate a kebab with falafel, and it was apparently the best thing in the world. No. The falafel kebab was apparently really fucking good. And I generally, I trust my wife in that judging of the foods. So I advise people. And it's also like, they had mayo on the table, a full thing. So me as a Belgian with a bottle of mayo, I'm always happy.
Okay. Well, they won't be getting kebabs here because they're starting a 20-minute climb at about 9%. And then it's 16Ks of rolling to the finish. This looks really, really good for Bora. I'll say like for Kemner and Vlasov with that sort of climb, 20 minutes, and then that sort of rolly finish. Very, very, very good for them to play numbers. So,
also steep ramps like on top.
Yeah. Who do you like to win over this? UAE got a strong team too.
Who do you like to, who do I like to win this? Me personally.
I like Vlasov to win it.
I think so as well, actually. I think he's a good name to throw out there. Alar wins the stage, by the way.
Or at least Alar.
Yeah. Him versus Matthews, and he's going to beat Matthews on a flat finish.
And the sprint field is a little bit soft.
Well, that's... And there's like actually two sprint stages.
Yeah, yeah. There's like a couple of sprints. Like Milan against Matthews against...
Milan wins the flat ones.
Ternesse.
Yeah, he should. He should.
But he's got...
If he doesn't, he should get fired.
A foot shorter than him, leading him out. Cozzoni. So we'll see how that works. Okay, that's all the race.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Previews. It's a lot of racing coming up. I think HBO or Max just announced, not a plug, obviously. HBO or Max just announced that in the US, at least, you can watch a decent proportion of the races that Eurosport and Discovery or GCN Plus used to have by doing, I think, the Bleacher Report or like the BR add-on to your subscription. Anyway, there is a way to watch it in the US now, all these Mickey Mouse races that we love dearly and hold close to our heart. And then you also
next
gotta
up
have
Australia,
like Peacock and NBC. Australia.
You're fucked.
No solution yet. I don't think so.
It's so sad.
Yeah. That stuff. The TDF Enduro announced wildcards for, unsurprisingly, Israel Tudor. Israel already got their wildcard, I think, and they just accepted it. But the Tudor, Bardiani, and Polti were the discretionary wildcards of the Giro, unsurprisingly. So an Italian team, Corotec, loses out because Tudor are a sponsor of the race.
Also because they're not good enough. Tudor's a better team. So sorry, but
Tudor's a better team as well.
I don't want to hear it. Q36.5, also a better team. So if you want to be an Italian team and actually pretend that you deserve to be at the race, then at least be good enough to be at the race. Yes, that also counts for Polti Cometa. Yes, they won a stage with Davide Baez, but that was a fluke stage, so it's not replicable. But yeah, they won with Fortunato, but they don't have Fortunato now. They have Piganzoli, which is a good rider, which is probably better than Fortunato in certain races. So, but... it's also a team that is not World Tour, Grand Tour, Giro worthy, in my opinion. So it's okay. It's politics, but it's also positive because we can always complain about, oh, they're selecting the Italian teams. But let's be honest about it. If they didn't, these Italian teams wouldn't exist. So I think that's a positive side. Lotto decided not to go. And I checked their points because I was curious about what they did last year after like skipping the Giro, was it worth it or not? And apparently they scored 1,400 UCI points last year during the Giro by doing those Mickey Mouse, ChatGPT, French and Belgian races. So I guess if they do a similar route again this year when it comes to the schedule and also get similar results, which the lead didn't win all of them. Like he won, I think, two of them, and then they got close with plenty of riders that you wouldn't necessarily think of immediately. And if they can do that again, I guess it's worth skipping, I guess.
Yep. For the Tour, Lotto and Israel will be going by automatically, and Total and UnoX got the two wild cards. There's no other French Pro Conti team missing out. So not as hotly contested with so many of the French teams in World Tour at the moment automatically getting invitations. And so, yeah, hard to argue against Total and UnoX going there. I would say look out for Bardiani in the Giro. I think they're, you know, Pellizzari and other riders are quite nice. They're actually not bad. So I'd like to see them in breakaways. In Italy, there was also... You're going to have to run me through this, Benji. Your erstwhile hero, Vincenzo Nibali, acting a fool.
Yeah. Actually, like, first of all, step one, he's got this thing on Twitch called Squalo TV. He's got a Twitch channel where he live streams a cycling topic discussion thing that he does with Pozzo Vivo and some other people. He's on there. And one of their takes was that it was the whole story we've heard millions of times of, oh, the Zwift Academy people in races. Is it a good pathway to get into cycling for, like, for Jay Vine back in the day, for example, like this Italian guy called Mattia Gafuri? Is this a valid way to get into the sport? Because technique might not be there and they might be a danger to themselves and to other people. And it's only based on watt per kilo that they perform on Zwift and so forth. And anyway, that's like the thing that started it behind the scenes. But then it all, like, transpired when Mattia Gafuri, the Italian we spoke about, a rider that is in this year's Zwift Academy, he is a finalist, I'm pretty sure, in that as well. And I think towards the end of December, I think 30th of December, he posted a Strava activity where he beat one of Nibali's KOMs. He took one of Nibali's KOMs and Nibali responded to that, "Bravo, Gaffa." This is a Benji translation, so it's about 90% accurate. But the most important parts will be accurate. I'm not putting Nibali in a bad light. He puts himself in a bad light here. And he said, "Okay, bravo, Gaffa. After this, you need to win 3 or 4 more Grand Tours and some classics, and you need to lose 3 kilos, and then maybe you can start celebrating." So, sorry, but Nibali's a fucking dick sometimes towards competitors in Grand Tours. We saw it towards Roglic, I think, when he said, come take a look at my trophies back in the day when they were having their squirrel in the Giro 2018. But then later on, like, it was always competitor based. It's never been like as pitiful as an Italian youngster taking a Strava KOM then roasting him that he hasn't won Grand Tour. Sorry, but that's purely his ego. That's purely Nibali's ego that's been hurt, and he's putting that out there, and he's being a little bitch right now.
Oh, he's 39 years old. It goes to show, like, and it's and not just Nibali, but, like, it doesn't matter how many Grand Tours you win, how many races you win, how many people will say you're the best. Like, if you're an insecure person,
yeah,
you're an insecure person.
You're
like,
and you're Vincenzo fucking Nibali, man. Grow up.
I know, but I'm surprised he's not more supportive of Virgolito and Go. Is it because they basically did it their own way and forced their own way into the world of cycling? Because, Frank, be real, like, Italian cycling is not in a place where they can say Virgolito is not good enough to be going at least pro Conti. Like, they have two riders in the top 50.
Yep.
And there's, like, old school guys like Bettiol, he's not ranked in the top 200 riders in the world. There's like 30 other Italians ahead of him. So, like, maybe these new breed of data focused guys are the way forward.
Now,
I'm surprised there's so much pushback against it, because I thought they'd be supportive of other Italians trying to break in.
I know that Brambilla came on the Squalo TV to discuss it as well, the Zwift generational gap between traditional versus new way to get into the sport. And Brambilla was actually supportive of Vergalito and Gafuri, who actually both have a podcast together. So they're the Italian LR and Benji.
Nothing
apparently.
Good that comes out of people having a podcast, Benji.
But and Bettiol and Nibali were kind of against the new way to get into the sport.
But what do you mean against?
I don't fucking know, man.
Like, are they, like, what do you mean? Like, they're doing something illegal, or
that,
like,
they're missing out on important skills to get into the sport and to be able to ride in the peloton? But that, we've gone over that.
Didn't
Fergalito
do a didn't he do a million outdoor races as well?
Vine did, like, as well.
Yes. People act like the Vine literally was, like, not allowed to leave his house. Seriously, they act like he was. You don't think he was also training and racing outside?
Bradbury just podiumed Santa Sudanander last week as well, the women's race. So they're actually performing, eh? They're not dog shit.
Jason Osborne, Jay Vine, Virgolito, Bradbury, Matt Alderman was also good. I think she's top 10 GC or near about. Like, it's a Finnish conversation. If you got the watts to get through via Zwift Academy, you're probably a pretty good rider, especially as it's more competitive now. So many riders know it's, you get on a pro team, you get a pro contract. There's no, like, if you win the competition, you get the pro contract. It's not like when you go to a training camp, beat everybody, but someone like Nibali says, oh, yeah, but, you know, you don't I don't like the, you know, the way you look. And so you don't get a contract. No, you get the contract if you win the prize. So it's like competitive now. And so it's a higher quality of people even.
And it's also completely unrelated to what Nibali said in that Strava comment. I will not believe that that comment by Nibali is related to his disagreement on the generational gap between traditional and new ways to get into sport. It's his ego getting hurt. That's the only thing I want to hear. But
why
I do
would
have
you
to
care
add,
about KOM?
I don't care. I don't know. I don't. It's more important than Grand Tours, I guess. But I do have to add important closure towards it. They both went on Squalo TV afterwards to kind of close the whole situation. I haven't heard that conversation yet, but the only right thing for Nibali to do is to apologize for saying that, in my opinion.
So this might just be marketing.
Imagine. Oh my God.
Are they taking, this is Logan Paul KSI. Oh my God, they've done it. They just got us to talk about his podcast by fabricating this beef.
Both podcasts. We spoke about Squalo TV and the other podcast.
I think they've done us here, Benji. They've gotten a free plug by fabric. Anyway, or Nibali's the 12-year-old. Who knows?
But I need to ask the audience. Should I forgive Vincenzo Nibali or should I not? Or is
it depends on
behavior.
What he said in the podcast.
It's Italian. I will never know.
Oh, flags fly forever. He won those. You know, remember how he made you feel in your heart when he won, Benji.
He lost quite a lot of races too.
True. There's a lizard that's gone up to the door. He's looking at me. Look at him go. Where are you going, buddy? You can't come in here. Big lizard. Last topic before we get onto sort of what else we're doing. This was very, very strange, but unsurprising, sadly, was E3 Saxo Classic, who is kind of an independent race. People maybe think that all the Cobble Classics are owned by the same organizer. That's not correct. They're sort of an independent race, and they have a history of promoting the race with, they would think, provocative. Most people would say distasteful or sexist posters. And they released a cartoon on their Twitter account last week related to Wout van Aert. Wout van Aert won the cyclocross race when he kicked his saddle off his bike, and the cartoon had a photo of a crowd that was supposed to be representing LGBT people, and Benji will correct me if my Dutch is wrong, saying the crowd was saying, oh, they're enjoying this, with the implication that they were enjoying it because Wout van Aert's saddle had come off and...
Combination.
You know,
So how the correct translation is basically that the cartoon was saying, the title above the cartoon was LGBTQ, people are enthusiastic about Wout van Aert finishing without his saddle. Oh, obviously a homophobic comment. And then the audience, spectators in the background with a rainbow flag above them, in like the text balloon, it said about Van der Poel, his rainbow jersey, of course, saying that they're shouting about his rainbow jersey, which is also just like that one's less homophobic, but it's kind of like a cheap dig and I don't like it. And also additionally, it's not fucking funny, man. Like it's fucking 90s, 80s all over again. And it's typical E3 marketing because 2011, they posted a P Magazine model, which P Magazine is kind of like the, what's that? That magazine that was Playboy with all the naked women and so forth. Basically that was that as like the poster of their race, which, okay, that's, that woman chose to be on that and so forth. So that's less, it's pretty degrading still anyway. But then the next one was who is the fastest in Heidelberg in 2014 with, a female cyclist riding three other females like a horse.
Well, that's the thing. It's not just using like attractive women to promote the race. It's like, also they're shown in like a degrading way. Like that's why these posters were like so distasteful and just straight up misogynistic. Like it's not just, it's also, like it takes that one step further. And then there was like the one playing on the Peter Sagan, when he, I think, pinched a podium girl on the bottom or someone on the stage on the bottom. Yeah. It like basically was replicating that. So that's the history of the organization. They were back in 2011, 2014, 2015. I haven't remembered the ones recently, but they've got four.
It was an old lady. In the last 3 years, it was basically who's going to be able to kiss Eugene or something, like an old woman's name, a grandma, and then the grandma was like preparing her lips to kiss the winner or something on the finish line. What was that?
Man, that's all right.
That's just West Flemish humor.
Yeah, that's all right.
Still bad humor, but
then they took it down and apologized for it. But what is sort of curious to me here is, right, and we've got a recent comparison. So this is a World Tour race organizer. This ain't a small race. This is a big race, World Tour category race. And when Mattias Mikkels and Gerben Theisen put out their, Gerben Theisen posted a photo of Mikkels last year in Tour of Guangxi, the UCI media on Twitter, they had a tweet out and a statement out the next day, basically saying that they condemn all forms of discriminatory behavior, racist behavior, and they referred it to the UCI Disciplinary Commission the next day.
Yep.
And I would say this is in worse faith, even. This poster is in worse faith.
It's a UCI race.
It's a UCI World Tour race. And they haven't said, I've not seen anything. Why are the people who, whatever, tweeted this or whatever, not referred to the Disciplinary Commission in the same way as Mikkels was? Now, maybe David Lapartien, because he's in the United Arab Emirates, he wants to get back to Europe first before he tweets about diversity and inclusion. Doesn't want to condemn it there, but I don't know. I was very surprised not to see them make a statement about it. So, because it's straight up a homophobic thing.
And it's like,
how can you not, like, how can you, if you're a gay rider in the peloton and you're seeing a World Tour race tweet that out and UCI just says nothing? All right. And fair enough.
It's also like, cycling is not a sport where it seems openly accepted to come out as gay in the peloton as well, I feel like, because percentage-wise in the men's peloton, there have to be some, on paper, people that might not be straight, which is perfectly fine, but the fact that it's not, it's also perfectly fine if they don't want it public, but it has a reason that they're not necessarily being public about it in my head then as well. And that shouts to me that it doesn't feel like a safe environment for them to come out with that. And stuff like this makes it harder for people that are in that situation to be open about that.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe something is going on behind the scenes. The UCI is saying, what the fuck was that? You need to take that down. I don't know. But yeah, just interesting to compare the two. Interesting to compare the two incidents. Because to me, they both fall roughly under the same bracket of behavior.
True.
That was our news roundup. What have you got on the next week, Benji? Because I got a lot on. But what do you got on?
Quite a bit, actually. I'm gonna go on my Box Hill ride, as I mentioned earlier. Gonna make a little video of that. Yeah. Hopefully, I'm not good at vlogging videos. That's just, I need to. You like, I saw some of your vlogs that might or might not be somewhere on the internet.
Vlog, yeah.
And you've got that going. Whenever I put a camera on myself, I kind of don't know what to say anymore when it's not on a podcast for some reason. So I need to like train myself on doing that, also doing that in public, but I'm trying to do that for a few new videos. I'm also considering hiring an editor. So that's also, I've already got someone that is very interested. So that could make my videos a bit better. So I'm focusing on that stuff, but also I'm going to try and enjoy these races, Valenciana, Alula, and so forth, those kind of races. And what else is in my calendar in the next week? I don't know. I'm gonna try and ride up Mont Ventoux on Zwift, I guess.
Okay, that's fair enough. You got a lot of races to watch. You ready for what I'm doing? I'll fly, flying out on Tuesday night, fly Barcelona, fly straight to Amsterdam, train to Visma HQ, then got meetings, then. So I'm going to be so cooked. And then I've got to fly back to Barca, then to Andorra. Then Mrs. Rouge will meet me. It's going to be an odyssey.
Wait.
It's going to be an odyssey, isn't it? Then I'm going to... Yeah, go on.
Two questions. How is Toby doing?
Toby's good, enjoying this. Well, it's actually scarily warm in Andorra at the moment.
Okay. Question two. How are your horses?
Rogue Bear is flying, man. It placed in Sydney, like, and Queensland City Saturday races multiple times. So yeah, Rogue Bear's doing really, really well.
Is there a place where people can follow Rogue Bear, or is that, does he not have an Instagram page
follow
yet?
Like, you mean like, has he got his own Strava account?
His Instagram account.
Great track work this morning, Rogue Bear. And yeah, I give him a kudos. Fuck, he's look at his heart rate. That's actually, I'm all full of, I'm in
sponsored
my
sponsored by Wahoo or something with like a strap.
Should we create a Strava for racehorses so people can follow their racehorse and see the track work it did? Imagine you're an owner. You see, fuck, my horse hasn't done any exercise for 4 days. What are they doing with it?
It's got a race on Saturday. What's the like on this horse?
What's the watts per kilo?
On this
higher
horse?
Than a human. I don't know. Okay. But they're like 450, 500 kilos, and their VO2 would be huge, man. Their VO2 would be huge. Yeah, Benji, Luke just said that watts per kilo, 1 horsepower.
Fuck off.
Very good. That's how Luke is banned.
Per horse. 1 horsepower per horse.
So yeah, he's going well. And then I'm going to be doing the before our Flanders trip, I'm going to do the a threshold plan. On join. So once I get back in Andorra, I got that threshold plan ready to load up. And so you can follow me on Strava doing that as well as join. You can follow people on join, but I'll be doing that join plan. So I'm keen for that.
Why are you doing this? Why are you training? Why are you training? Like, I was worse than
we
you.
We have to do 190 Ks in a day.
Mate, I'm the one that needs to catch up. You're fine.
I'm not.
What, 190 Ks in a day?
Could be cold.
190 in a day?
Yeah.
What do you mean 190 in a day?
We have to do 190 Ks in one of the days. And that includes like the climbs around. Oh, no. Nah. I told you this.
I swear I looked up Flandrian Challenge.
The 3 day one is 75 Ks, 190, 140. And the 140's got the steep hills.
I'm getting fucked.
So it's not.
But it was 90.
No, it's 190. That's like 7 hours plus.
For you? That's 14 for me.
We'll be out there all day.
I'll have to put lights on my bike.
Well, yeah, we should do that anyway. People want to send us lights. Anyway, that's our first edition of the weekly show. We really, really hope you enjoyed it. Open to feedback on the format. But it's good to talk about different topics, previews, recaps of the smaller races. We've got a lot of racing coming up this week. So we'll see you next week, same time, with a recap of all those races we mentioned, as well as any other ad hoc news along the way. Until then.